Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today, you'll hear Seth take a closer look at the day's news. Plus, a brand new edition of Late Night Chats, featuring late night staffers Sarah Jenks Daly and Kyle O'Donnell. But first, let's go to Seth.
President Trump is facing a series of crises, both natural and of his own making, from hurricanes to immigration reform. And at every turn, he continues to remind us that he is just fundamentally unfit for the job of president. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. In times of crisis, people want to hear gravity and reassurance from their president. Instead, we have a president who can't seem to strike the right tone when a new hurricane is on its way. Like when he tweeted yesterday, "Hurricane looks like largest ever recorded in the Atlantic." Hey, man, this is a serious and deadly threat. Save your exclamation points for when the McRib comes back. Trump is clearly not suited for the presidential task of reassuring a worried nation. Just yesterday, he had the opportunity to talk about the government's preparations for Hurricane Irma before a meeting with congressional leaders, and this was all he could muster.
There's a new and seems to be record-breaking hurricane heading right toward Florida and Puerto Rico and other places. We'll see what happens. We'll know in a very short period of time, but it looks like it could be something that will be not good. Believe me, not good.
Not good. You sound like a grandparent who just walked out of a Transformers movie. What'd you think, Grandpa? Not good! How does a car that tall turn into a 30-foot robot? Where's all the extra metal coming from? Makes no sense. But while he prepares to deal with Hurricane Irma, Trump is also dealing with a political storm of his own making, his decision to end DACA, the Obama-era program that allows undocumented immigrants brought here as children to remain in the country. Even Republicans, like House Speaker Paul Ryan, had urged Trump not to terminate DACA so that Congress could come up with a solution instead. And Ryan made that clear last week.
I actually don't think he should do that. And I believe that this is something that Congress has to fix. These are kids who know no other country, who were brought here by their parents and don't know another home. And so I really do believe that there needs to be a legislative solution.
There you go. Couldn't be clearer. Paul Ryan did not want Trump to end DACA. And it's not like Ryan would ever change his mind as soon as Trump chose to end DACA, right?
President Trump was right in his decision. He made the right call.
Paul Ryan flipped so much he should be at SeaWorld. So now, Ryan and the rest of the GOP leadership, which had previously urged Trump to hold off on ending DACA, had once again traded in their dignity and changed their minds to line up behind Trump. And instead of rewarding them for their loyalty, just hours later, Trump threw all of them under the bus out of nowhere by saying he might change his mind on DACA, tweeting, "Congress now has 6 months to legalize DACA. If they can't, I will revisit this issue." So basically it went, "Don't rescind DACA. I'm rescinding DACA. Well, in that case, we support your decision. I don't care what you do. Just fix DACA." Trump's Pottery Barn rule is, if I break it, Paul Ryan buys it. Trump, right now, Trump is siding with Democrats and undercutting his own party. He's like a hurricane, except he doesn't follow any path. Oh, Hurricane Trump. He's heading for the Democrats, and whoa, hold on, he's changing course. Look out. So naturally, everyone was confused as to what it was that Trump actually wanted. Reporters asked him yesterday if he was already regretting his decision to end DACA, but he insisted he was not.
No second thoughts.
Of course. Of course he doesn't have second thoughts. He doesn't have first thoughts. You can't... You can't have a sequel to a movie that was never made. I can't wait for Wizard Finger 2. I didn't get it. Oh, I'm sorry, Grandpa. And then earlier today, Trump issued a tweet that seemed to assure the Dreamers that they would be safe for the next 6 months, writing, "For all those DACA that are concerned about your status during the six-month period, you have nothing to worry about, no action." And it turned out that tweet came via Nancy Pelosi's suggestion after Donald Trump called her.
Well, you know, I'm not famous for going into details of conversations with presidents. We did talk about some other issues, but because he then put out the... And I was reporting to my colleagues. I said, this is what I asked the president to do, and boom, 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 the tweet appeared. So that was good.
So... Democratic House Leader Nancy Pelosi got Donald Trump to call her and then suggested he tweet something that he then tweeted. That is some serious Jedi Nancy Pelosi. Bravo. These are not the immigrants that you're looking for. Now, it's important to understand that despite his tweet, Trump's administration is already in the process of winding down DACA. They aren't accepting any new applications and recipients whose protections expire by March need to make sure they reapply by October. So Trump's tweet is confusing, which is not surprising because Trump often lacks a basic grasp of the details when it comes to policy. Just take tax reform as an example. Yesterday, he flew to North Dakota to talk about cutting government red tape. See if you can make sense of anything he's saying here.
North Dakota is an inspiring example of the amazing things that are possible when we unleash the genius of American innovators. Unite the red tape, and I'll tell you, and we have to unite everything, and all that red tape becomes beautiful when you get rid of it. But, and we're getting rid of, are we getting rid of a lot of red tape, by the way?
He sounds like a regional theater actor who blanked on his lines. To be or not to be? Because, I mean, how can you be... If you're not being, am I lying? But somehow, Trump's speech managed to get even worse when he decided to call his daughter and White House advisor Ivanka to the stage in this cringeworthy moment.
Come up, honey. Should I bring Ivanka up? Come up. Sometimes they'll say, you know, he can't be that bad a guy. Look at Ivanka. No, come on up, honey. She's so good. She wanted to make the trip. She said, Dad, can I go with you? She actually said, Daddy, can I go with you? I like that, right? Daddy, can I go with you? I said, yes, you can.
Ooh, what was that? Bring your daughter to jerk day? Usually when you hear daddy and honey that many times, you have to clear your browser history. Now, Trump's scattered grasp of policy and the freewheeling nature of the White House may be why new Chief of Staff John Kelly has tried to impose order. The New York Times reported last week that Kelly has regimented the flow of paper, people, and information inundating Trump. The president, for his part, has marveled at the installation of management controls that would have been considered routine in any other White House, with Trump telling a senior aide, "I now have time to think." And here is our best guess of what Trump thinks about when he has the time.
Ivanka.
Wall. China. Wall.
Ivanka.
Golf. Wall. China. LGBTQ.
But clearly there are some close to Trump who don't appreciate the new regime. Although their analogies don't always quite hold up. A reporter for Politico tweeted this week that a former White House official just described General Kelly as the Mrs. Doubtfire of the White House. General Doubtfire because he's gentrified everything. Did you see Mrs. Doubtfire? It's not about gentrification. It's the sad story of a woman with face blindness who can't recognize her own husband in a wig. You let him know we took down Doubtfire. We went after Trump and then got a little bit of Doubtfire. Trump's inability to understand DACA is only making the situation worse. If he doesn't want to end the program, then the answer is simple, just don't do it. Instead, he's needlessly throwing the lives of hundreds of thousands of young people into chaos. That's, what's the word for that?
Not good.
This has been A Closer Look.
Hi, this is Sarah Jinks Daly, and I am a supervising producer at Late Night.
And I'm Kyle O'Donnell, and I'm a junior talent booker at the show.
And this is Late Night Chats with Sarah and Kyle. I thought we could start by how we met.
Okay.
Okay. So you were in the Page program at NBC.
Yes, I was.
And can you talk a little bit about your introduction to Late Night via the Page program?
Absolutely. So the Page program at NBC is a postgraduate media rotational program where you filter through different parts of the company and the shows here in the building. So you could be placed in a marketing aspect, you could be placed in a production role, and my second rotation in the program was here at Late Night. There are two pages that work on the show every couple of months. One works in audience and one works right outside of the studio.
Which is what you did.
Yes, which is what I did. You help escort talent and you're basically there to be the eyes and ears and serve as a liaison between the production and anyone coming to the studio.
Right. So you mostly work as that in that capacity with the talent department.
Yes.
Which is where I was at that point.
Absolutely.
And what was your favorite part, besides working with me, what was your favorite part about that job?
It was a great opportunity to see how a show comes together because you're right outside the studio. You're seeing everything that happens, and it's kind of – it's an access that no one else really can have. You're seeing everything all day long.
And I think when you prove yourself to be capable and a normal human being who's organized, then we ultimately give you a lot more to do.
Right.
And so you get a lot of access just within the department.
Right. Yeah. Because you're seeing so much, there are a lot of opportunities to then look at the show and pursue the things you want to and meet the people you want to. So if you're after your time at the desk, you decide that you want to maybe try out writing, you have become friendly with all the writers and can ask them questions about their journeys, or like me, you can try to pursue a job in talent.
So did you know when you started working as a page for our show that you wanted to work in our department?
Once I met you, yes. I knew I wanted to work in late night television when I joined the Page program, and that is what my goal was, but I didn't know in which capacity.
Right.
And then when I got to know the department and what they did on a daily basis and what role they play in the ecosystem of the show, I realized that's where I really wanted to be. I like the idea that the talent department shapes what the show is going to look like on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
And what drew me to the show specifically was that the show is this amalgamation of all these things I really care about.
Great
literature.
Word.
Thank you.
Great word.
I was an English major, everyone.
Did you learn that in the Page program?
No. That was a fine education.
Good for you.
It was this amalgamation of literature and politics, theater, television,
We're
movies.
We're very, very versatile over here.
Yeah. Which was great.
So how soon after you finished your rotation with us, what was the time that elapsed between you ending your rotation as a page and then starting as an assistant in our department?
I finished the rotation early September, and at that point, all the shows are gearing up for their new seasons, and people are moving and changing roles, and by early October, I was starting
like
as an assistant. Yeah, it was very, very quick turnaround.
Interesting.
Yes.
And now you are a junior booker in the department.
I am.
So how has your role changed in terms of day-to-day?
In the day-to-day aspect, I'm doing less of the administrative assistant work I was doing. So no longer doing expense reports and calendars and the phones. And It's more of finding the things I want to bring onto the show. I'm someone who I'm always, even when I wasn't in this job, I was always reading Entertainment Weekly, Variety, on Twitter, seeing what was happening in the industry.
We have that in common.
Oh, yes, we do. We know everything before anyone else does.
Or we think we do.
Or yeah. So it's still being on top of all that stuff,
right.
But I can really dedicate my entire day to that and trying to figure out what I can bring to the show.
Do you think that your time as a page and just having that access, the access to watching the show every night and seeing who is on, helped you understand the direction the show takes and what Seth is interested in and the guests that he really got excited about, that you could see that happen in the when they were sitting in the chair next to him?
Absolutely. And at that time, I was a page in the summer of 2015. That's when the presidential election was starting to really gear up.
Yeah.
And that's when the show, I think, started hitting its stride.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a great opportunity to see in that 3 to 4 months how the show was getting more political and taking greater risks and having them pay off.
Yeah.
And because you're sitting at the desk and you're watching the show every single night, you realize what makes a good interview and what doesn't make a good interview from a talent standpoint.
Right.
And I was able to gauge what Seth was excited about and what he really cared about and what led to an interesting conversation. All of those things are really important in my current job, trying to figure out which guests should come on.
So for like a little insider view for those people that are listening, which is really just my mother.
and my mother, if she can figure out how to use the podcast.
Who do not know how to subscribe to a podcast. Insider view into the talent department. Like, you guys have a meeting every single day.
Yes.
And you have huge boards up on
Correct.
The wall.
Sarah knows all this because she was a former member of the talent department.
Yes. I feel like I'm still part-time.
Oh, 100%. 100%. But
I'm just not in those meetings.
Right.
So you have these huge boards.
Yes.
That plan out 4 months in advance, sometimes five.
Yes.
Can you just talk about what goes on in the meetings in terms of how you guys interact with figuring out who should best be on the show and after you speak with Seth about
Yes.
it?
So there are five bookers on the show, or five people that book on the show, and we all have our own jurisdiction and what we're looking at. Specialties. So we all are looking at our specific things, networks, shows, fields, mm-hmm. and seeing what people are talking about and what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So then every day we meet as a department and we go through and we look at what's
like what the happening. Status of a booking
yes,
is.
Absolutely. And sometimes a guest falls out 2 days before they're supposed to be here. So we all scramble to try to find something.
Yeah. I think an interesting part of what I didn't really understand when I started at the show, because this was my first job in television, which I think Hallie, who is the department head and a producer on our show, is so great at, is crafting the show to be a good show. Because even if you have the greatest guests in the world, the greatest lead guest movie star and the greatest second guest and a really interesting third guest, they might not make sense together.
Absolutely.
So that is a big part of your meeting,
yes.
too.
Yes, trying to make every day's show work as its own unit,
right.
as its own building block for the entire show. So making sure that we are getting these political guests in at least once a month, we're getting authors and writers in and making sure nothing is neglected, but everything is still working cohesively.
Right. Having good combinations.
Yes. Making sure the show will work in its hour span
mm-hmm.
on television is incredibly important. Like, we can look at three names on that board and think, wow, they're all such three wonderful guests, but realize that for the flow of the show and what the at-home viewer wants to see,
mm-hmm.
maybe we should move two of them to a different day.
Right.
Just spreading out those three wonderful guests is always great.
I think that's a good summation of how it works.
Yes.
Okay. When we met, we found out that we have a few things in common, so
yes.
I would like to just go over those.
Sure.
Do you know what the first one is?
We are both from the greatest state.
Greatest state in the union.
Massachusetts.
Yes, the best.
The Bay State.
Do you know the two senators from Massachusetts?
No.
You know one.
No.
Yeah, you do. She's been here.
Oh, yes, Elizabeth Warren.
Okay, great.
She's wonderful.
Okay, one out of two is fine.
Yes.
The other one was, I only know because I visited him in D.C. when I was in high school, but he was in the House of Representatives at that point. It's Markey. I'm sure you'd know his face. Anyway, moving on.
Okay, sorry.
What was the second thing? Or what is
we both attended Jesuit universities.
Yes, correct.
Correct.
Good job.
Thank you. Sarah went to BC.
Boston College.
Yes.
Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts. And you went to Georgetown,
I
which
did.
I applied to and got waitlisted and then didn't
She's
get in.
She's not bitter.
No.
She's crying,
BC
everyone.
Was... Kyle! This is a... Jeez. BC was the greatest place ever for me. I didn't know it at the time, but I think that's something that you realize once you spend some time at college.
Right. Did you like having a Jesuit education?
Loved. Loved.
Same here.
My favorite class in college was from a priest named Father Schlesser. Did you guys have a core curriculum?
Yes.
Okay. So for the core curriculum, we had to fulfill certain requirements. And for the history requirement, which was my major, the first class I took was like an intro to history. But he told it with the very big focus on art history.
Oh, cool.
So we had a PowerPoint presentation every day. And he showed paintings and art from different periods in time and then told stories about the periods. And I was like, if I can take more classes from this person... What do I have to do? Major in history? Great, done.
I think a lot of people are intimidated by Jesuit educations.
Why?
Because they think that it's going to be religiously focused.
Yeah.
But at Georgetown, at least, you did have to have a theology requirement. But one of the classes was just conversations about God from whatever religion you wanted it to be.
Was that a class a lot of athletes took?
Everyone had to take it. My other theology class, speaking of athletes.
Because we had Rocks for Jocks.
Oh, okay.
I tried to get into that. It was full.
The other class, theology class I took was Buddhism and poetry.
Oh, interesting.
I was the only person not stoned.
I didn't know people smoked weed at Georgetown.
People in the Buddhism and poetry class certainly did.
Makes sense.
Yes.
Okay, what is the third thing about us that we have in common? But you are stronger willed about this than I am.
I don't know.
We have a shared obsession with someone's social media presence.
Listeners at home, if you are not on your phones right now looking at Busy Phillips' Instagram stories, you are missing out.
You are missing out.
She truly is the voice of her generation and her medium of choice. She is the Hannah Horvath of her generation on Instagram.
Do you think that she appeals to people from all age groups like myself and you who are a millennial?
Sarah, I do believe you technically are a millennial.
No, I don't think I am.
I think, fact check. Our fact checker is saying she is.
There's no fact checker here.
There are several.
I don't think I am in my heart.
I think I am 50-50. We can, well, back to Busy.
What do you think a millennial is? A lot of them watch our show.
Yes, absolutely. And are listening right now.
No, just our mothers.
Okay. Who certainly are not millennials. The idea of a millennial in theory and what the stereotype is someone who isn't hardworking, very entitled, doesn't want to work for things. They expect that they can take the easy way out and get what they want.
Right. I don't think that's true, though. I do think millennials are very hardworking.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think some are.
Yes, but I think they're hustlers.
Yes. And I do think whenever I go home and I'm like, oh, I'll buy that on Amazon or something, my mom, hi, mom, is always like, this is why businesses aren't still in business.
She's against Jeff Bezos.
Well, no, she's just like, she believes in local business, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can get my paper towels for $1.50 cheaper and not have to lug them back to my Brooklyn apartment, it's just easier that way.
Yeah.
And so it's not like that I'm looking for the easy way out in that way. It's just that there are other options.
There. We had Hillary Duff on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
She was excellent.
Amazing.
So much fun. And I asked her a question before she went out for her interview that didn't make it to air because we didn't have enough time because we talked about other things. But I asked her about millennials because the show Younger is so focused on millennial culture. And she was like, what's the problem with millennials? That we work our ass off? Great. I'm a millennial.
Absolutely. I think that way. The fact that after college, I didn't have a job lined up and I waited tables in Maine.
We have that in common too.
Oh, yay. Another added to the list, fact checker. I waited tables for about 4 months waiting for things to come and applying to jobs every single day and interviewing and networking.
Was that because you think your focus was more on, I really want to do something I love as opposed to I want to get a job? Like, I would rather wait tables and figure that out.
Absolutely. And
I did that too. Maybe I am sort of a millennial.
Oh, she's coming over.
Identity crisis.
She's crying again. I do think that I was really holding out for something that I really wanted to do, and I wanted to work in this industry, and I didn't want to get stuck in something. That's, I think, the biggest thing. And I think that's how most millennials feel.
Yeah.
And you could say that I was freeloading at my parents, but I was waiting tables every day, and I was making money. And so when I eventually got the Page program, I could move to New York
and
live.
Right, yeah.
Which is important.
That is important.
Yes. Well, back to Busy's. I could talk about this all day long. Busy Phillips, if you're listening.
She's not listening.
I will start a Twitter campaign for her to listen to this. Her Instagram stories are so enlightening. She really talks
about
her life.
She's been on our show. She was an excellent guest. We should have her back.
Absolutely.
You should tell everyone in the talent department.
Okay, writing it down.
Take it down.
But beyond busy, Sarah,
Kyle.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
So Sarah used to be a member of the talent department as a talent booker, and now she's moved on onto the role of a segment producer.
Correct.
How has your vision of a good show and a good guest changed since being a member of the talent department and now into being a seggy?
I think I never call myself that, by the way.
I know, which is exactly why I said it, because I know it bothers you. Even when you weren't a member of the segment.
I'm coming off like a total misanthrope here. I don't think my view of what makes a good guest has really changed, because I do think that prior to joining the other segment producers, Kevin and Henry, I was very involved in that department anyway, just through booking. Like, I think with the talent department, it is basically that is the most communicative you are with another department on the show, because you book the guest and then the producers produce the guest. So you talk a lot about what goes on with who has been booked. So I think I had an idea of what, I mean, when you watch the show every day, you know what works and what doesn't.
Right.
I think the difference between the segment producing and the booking is you just get a greater sense of like specifics and what tends to work with an audience, what cues, verbal cues Seth is giving when he's really into something, when he wants to continue talking about it, when maybe he wants to move on. I think all of those things are just, it's just a product of like paying closer attention, because you're on the floor watching the segment. You have your packet that you've provided to Seth and that you've put together for the guest. You have the cards that you've given to Seth to look over prior to the guest walking out. So you're just a little bit more involved in the minutiae of the guest being there.
And as you previously mentioned, this was your first job in television.
Yes.
How have you taken your past experiences in your other jobs and applied it here? Because I'm sure there are lots of people who want to get into television but are in other fields.
Yeah, I agree. I think that one of the things I've learned from just having a very different background and trajectory of getting here is that I am always more interested in, this is just because of my past, in people who have done a lot of different things. And I think that's what makes people interesting. I think if you know, like you did, if you knew you wanted to be in late night television, you applied to the Page program, you had a vision. I didn't have any of that. I was like, oh, I want to be creative and do something I love, but I don't know what that is yet. So I worked in magazine publishing straight out of college at Teen Vogue, which was the best first job I think anyone could ever have. I loved it so much. I was there for 3.5 years, and I worked in the entertainment department as an assistant and then assistant editor. So I got to write, which I love doing, and I also got the access to what you do in the talent department here, which is come up with great ideas for people to cover in the magazine. And that was where I started creating relationships with representation for these guests that we book at the show now. And I think that's a large part of being successful in the talent department, is fostering these relationships with people who will answer your calls and meet you for drinks and go out on a limb for you because you've gone out on a limb for them.
Right.
So I think that I was able to do that in the magazine industry, and I worked in that capacity for 3.5 years, and then at another job at a company doing similar thing just for a lot of different magazines for another year. And then I was at this magazine, Men's Vogue, which was a great magazine that folded at the end of 2008 because the whole world crashed. And then I was waiting tables for some time and freelancing. And then I went to this other fitness company. But I continued to freelance because I really loved the element of coming up with ideas for publications, and I was really still interested in that. And then a coworker I had an uncle who worked at SNL and set me up with some producers at SNL to have a conversation. And from that, I was able to snag an interview here right before the show started.
Right.
So I met with Mike Shoemaker, who's our executive producer, and I met with Hallie Raff, who is the head of your department, and she... I just convinced her that I could do the job. I don't know why she believed me, but I said, you know, I think I was like, I think the most important thing when you're interviewing for a position you've never had before is just to come across as a person who really wants to be there. Because if you're smart and you know you can do it and you want to be there, that is a person that is worth hiring.
Absolutely.
I think.
I agree. Attitude is everything.
Totally. My mom would love this.
Great.
Good thing she's listening.
Yes.
So, yeah, and then I've been here since we started the show, which has been an amazing ride.
Right. Speaking of being creative,
yes.
You are at the helm of the literary aspect of the show. Helm. See what I did? That was very literary.
It was.
Thank you.
Congrats.
Thank you.
A millennial. Yay. Definitely fishing for a compliment.
So talk about the role that authors play here and writers.
So when we started the show, when Seth and Mike, you know, came up with the types of guests that they wanted to have here, which in addition to film and television stars, they also wanted to have directors, tastemakers, politicians, people that maybe aren't typically on late night shows, but that are able to have interesting conversation. And one of those groups was novelists. And so Seth was really excited about having authors on the show, particularly novelists. We have other like nonfiction writers and directors and screenwriters. So we try and do that every 6 weeks or so. And it's been really exciting and fun because the publishing community's response has been overwhelmingly amazing. They are so grateful that we do it. And I think it's really a boon for us more than them.
Absolutely.
Because inherently, authors are storytellers and those people make the best guests.
Absolutely. And I think what I really like about it is that it's introducing me to authors that otherwise I may not be familiar with.
Yeah.
And works that I naturally wouldn't flock to and want to pick up. But because I see them on TV and I see their personalities and they really have this amazing opportunity to talk about their process and why they care about their stories, it makes me excited about these different books.
Oh, that's so nice.
You're so welcome, Sarah.
Well, I do think that it's also has been important to us to try and feature authors that maybe aren't particularly mainstream in the sense that they're getting all this publicity. Like, we just want to find people who have great books out there and that maybe just are, you know, not someone you would think of immediately, but have a wonderful grasp of what they do, and their book is amazing, and we want other people to hear about it.
Agreed.
Yeah. So that part has been really fun.
I agree.
Now I get to produce them, which is even better.
Now you're getting to let them say what they want to say.
Yes. All right. Is there anything else that you want to discuss with me?
Let me look at my notes. No.
Okay.
Oh, we should discuss the Nisha call. Ding.
I think that's our cue, everyone. With Kyle's reference to cereal, we are going to close this out. This has been fun.
It has been so fun.
Thank you for chatting with me.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening, everyone, including our moms. This has been Late Night Chats with Sarah and Kyle.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle @LateNightSeth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.